are so glad that you are listening to the Mission Point Community Church podcast. It's our prayer that this helps you grow in your relationship with Jesus and encourages you to show and share the love of Jesus everywhere you go. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's dive into the message.
I never know how to say this. If I went to camp or if I was sent to camp. Yeah, that's probably accurate. Thank you. Thank you. It's probably accurate. And I'll never forget it because that week my life changed. My life changed that week. Rolled into camp on Monday. Didn't know any of these people. Was getting to know them. And on Wednesday morning, they handed us a 3x5 card. And they said, we need you to hang on to this card all day long. I was a 12-year-old boy. Are you kidding me? Like, the fact that if I even had the same, like, socks, you know, at the end of the day would be a miracle. And I'm supposed to hold on to this 3x5 card all day. So here's what they did. They hand us this card in the morning. We keep this card. And then in the afternoon, they put us in our Home in the Woods groups. That was like our small group for the week. And it was awesome. I can still tell you where that Home in the Woods group met because that camp, it's in North Webster, it's Camp Adventure. I ended up going there for many years. I met my wife there years later. My kids have all gone there as campers. My son's worked there the last two summers. That place, I ended up working there for several years. It's very, very special to me. And it all started that week. I can take you, if you go out the long path towards Oak Island, go up over the hill, turn right, go down this long path. It's the second Home in the Woods site on the right. I'll never forget it. Because that day we walked all the way out there in the heat of the afternoon. We get sat down and they said, all right, everybody take out your 3x5 cards. And they're like, oh, okay, do I still have that? And we pull out this 3x5 card. And they said, now, all week long, we've been talking about having a relationship with God. And they hand us all these little golf pencils. And they said, here's what we want you to do. We want you to take your golf pencil and your 3x5 card. And we want you to write down the things that keep you from having a relationship with God. And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds simple. And they said, so let's give you some examples. And they start talking about sin, like things that we've done wrong. And then we're like, okay. And they said, now here's what we want you to do. We want you to go ahead and write down the things that you've done wrong on your card that are standing between you and a relationship with God. And I'm thinking, you can have your pencil and your card. Thank you very much. No. And then they go on to share. They said, this is your card. It's just for you. No one else is going to see it. And we're going to let you spread out throughout the woods. You can go in different places. We're going to give you some time to write this down. And write down the things that you've done or the things that have happened to you that keep you from a relationship with God. And they sent us out in the woods and, you know, again, I'm a 12-year-old boy and I'm like, okay, whatever. And so I go out and I find this spot and I'm like, okay, I don't want to see anybody's around. Like nobody can see me or whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't want to put stuff on this card. I don't know what's going to happen to this. So my creative brain gets thinking. I'm like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to write any of this down. Instead, I'm going to write down just an X. I'm going to put an X on the card because I know what that means because I don't know who's going to see this and I don't know what's going to happen to the card. And so I'm like, okay, what stands between me and God? And I'm like, oh, okay, got it. And I write down, I just think about it. I write down an X. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And I'm like, oh. And I write down another X. I'm like, okay. Shoot. I write down a third X. And I think, okay, As I got honest with myself, I wrote down another one. Now my card's got four X's on. Now I know what those mean. And I tell you what, every one of those was bigger than the two little hash marks that made an X. Some of them were giant. Some of them were big. None of them are your business. But I knew what they meant. And then the leader says, all right, everybody back over here. And I'm like, okay. He said, here's what we're gonna do. While we were away, everybody was in different parts of the woods, they had started a fire. And they're like, okay, so here's what we're gonna do. Everybody's gonna take your card. And we've been talking about this relationship with God, how God takes our stuff and then he gives us a new life. We're gonna burn these as a symbol. And I was like, yes, right? And I wad this thing up super tight. And then I'm like, oh no. If I wad it up too tight, then it's not gonna burn real well. So I unwrap it just a little bit, right? And I'm like, cause I don't want anybody, like I don't want there to be any evidence, even though the only thing I'd written on here were four X's. But in my mind, I knew what those were. And in every one of those, I gotta tell you, there was so much shame, there was so much pain, there was hurt, there was like embarrassment. Like I knew what those were. I knew what those represented. And I didn't want anybody to see that. And the fear was that, you know, I had this fear that if I throw it, you know, and I miss the fire and it falls out and another kid grabs it and reads it and is like, oh, he only put X's on his card or he, I know what his, you know, like I just had this fear like this is gonna come out. So I don't want anybody to know this. So I wrap it up and I remember that fire better be hot. I want these burned up. I don't want any evidence left. And that day we all threw our stuff in the fire. The story didn't end there, but I'll finish it in a little bit. Good morning, my name is Scott, and I get to be the interim teaching pastor here at Mission Point. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm working on my radio voice today, if you can't tell. I've got a little head cold thing going on. But I'm so glad that you're here because you're joining us in the middle of the series where we're talking about three stories. This idea that God has a story that he wants us and he invites us into, and that we have a story that has been shaped over time by experiences, things that we've done and things that have happened to us. And every day we interact with other people who have a story. And the whole goal is to connect our story and see how our story connects to God's story. But then the people that we meet and see and hang out with, to help them discover how their story is also connected to God's story. Those are the three stories. And if you missed it last week, Rick did a bang up job. That's bang up as in good, not like car wreck, like a good job of this story of the New Testament of these guys that were hanging out with Jesus post-resurrection and didn't even know it was him. And Jesus just shares with them the story of the Old Testament. It's an awesome job. He killed it last week. It was great. So go back and listen to that. Today, we're taking on another story out of the New Testament that involves Jesus. So if you got a Bible, grab it. We're going to go to John chapter 4 is where we're headed today. Our thing that we say here every week, if you don't have a Bible, we want to make sure you get one. Go out these doors, straight ahead, stop at the connection corner. They'll hook you up. But they'll also be on the screen. We're just going to plow through this text. And here's how we're going to do this today. We're going to read part of the text. And then at the end, we're just going to extract some principles. We're going to look at some principles out of this text. So to understand the story of where we're starting, this is Jesus will be featured in the story. And what has just happened, Jesus and his disciples had just been baptizing a bunch of folks. Jesus had been sharing this message of unconditional love. The disciples are sharing that message as well. And lots of people are getting baptized, so much so that it grabbed the attention of the Pharisees. They were these Jewish scholars in town, really smart fellas, right? Of these Jewish scholars, but it had gotten their attention and now they're getting frustrated. They're like, wait a minute, people aren't taking our online classes anymore. They're going to Jesus's classes. And so we want them to come to our classes. And so they're frustrated with Jesus. So tensions are rising, but because Jesus was Jesus and knew that there was a plan, that God had a plan for his people and God had a plan for all people and the time wasn't ready yet for the plan to unfold, Jesus and his disciples, they bounce out of that city. And so that's where we pick up the story, is they're ready to leave town because tensions are rising and the time is not ready yet. So that's why we get to John chapter 4, verse 4, we pick it up with this. Now he, Jesus, had to go through Samaria. Ooh, I'm six words in and we're gonna pause here real quick. Here's a question. Rick said there's gonna be a quiz later. There's not, just so you know, like he was lying to you. But here's a little audience participation. Here's a quiz for you now. This is a real quiz. I wanna know, if we're traveling from here to Fort Wayne. How many of you believe we have to go through Columbia City? Okay? Okay. Now I'm going to tell you, it's a trick question. Listen to how I said it. If we're going from here to Fort Wayne, do we have to go through Columbia City? No, we don't. Sorry, Mr. Graham. Like, you could be great teaching a marriage class. I'll see you on Tuesday, but you got that one wrong, okay? So we don't have to go through Columbia City, right? Can we go south of town? We can go through South Whitley and we can get there, right? We can head up North 15. We can take some county roads, go through Syracuse if we want, head up Cherubusco, end up in Columbia, end up in Fort Wayne. We don't have to go through Columbia City, right? There's multiple ways to get to Fort Wayne from here, right? We all can agree to this. Now you're like, I don't know, you tricked me once. I don't know what I want to do here, okay? The text says that Jesus, now he had to go through Samaria. But what we know geography-wise, that was actually the shortest path, but he didn't have to. And actually, here's where we get to understand a little bit about Samaria. Samaria, you have to go back and dig into this. I just fumbled into some of this research this week. Samaria was a town where these people were Jews. There had been this conflict earlier, and some Jews stayed there. They end up mixing races with other people. And so real, true Jews, they did everything they could to stay out of Samaria because the people there were considered unclean. So a real good Jew did not go through Samaria. They would go clear to South Whitley, maybe even Manchester, just to get all the way to Fort Wayne. That's how they're going. They are not going through Columbia City. I'm not a Columbia City hater, by the way. I like Columbia City, good people there, okay? But I'm using that as an illustration. But the text says that Jesus had to. Well, why did he have to? What was there that was so important that he had to go through Samaria? He came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Now, if you know the story, Joseph in the technicolor dream coat, Joseph in the many coat of many colors, that's the Joseph we're talking about. It was his dad's, it was his dad Jacob. It was his well that was there in the city. So again, when we see that in the New Testament, we should perk up because that's a significant moment when we're drawn in these Old Testament elders and leaders, and we see them in the New Testament. So it's kind of a big deal there. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, he sat down by the well. It was about noon. Now, since we're in a story series, I want to just point out, like, there's a lot of details that we get here from John, a lot of little nuggets that we get, and a lot of them are really important. John's trying to set the scene to help us understand this. What time was it? It was noon. Jesus sitting at the well. Now, it was noon when a Samaritan woman came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Now, his disciples had gone into town to get food, and the Samaritan woman speaks back to him and says to him, "Hey, let me just fill you in real quick in case you didn't know this. You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" Because Jews don't associate with Samaritans. We've already covered the Jewish Samaritan thing, but now this lady's like, I see her looking around like, "Hey, real quick, you shouldn't be talking to me." I think it's really funny that she's telling the king of the Jews, by the way, "Hey, you're a Jew," right? She looks at Jesus like, "You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. We're not supposed to talk. And you're a man. I'm a woman." That's like a double whammy, right? So you're really not supposed to talk to me. Like, this is a bad deal. But remember, Jesus had to go there. I wonder if maybe she was the reason why. Let's keep reading. "You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink?" Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and actually who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." Living water. Now that word living water there, it shows up in Isaiah, it shows up in Jeremiah, in the Old Testament prophets, it shows up in the Psalms. It shows up in lots of different places in the Old Testament where God refers to him as, refers to himself as living water, the spring of living water. And so when Jesus is saying this to her, now what he's doing is he's throwing her some clues. He's like, lady, real quick, like you want to have this discussion about like Jew versus Samaritan, but I need you to understand, if you knew who it was who you were talking to, you would know living water, living water. I'm like teeing it up for you, right? I'm the Messiah. I'm the one that you've been waiting for. I could have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, now she's missing the point. Sir, the woman said, you don't even have anything to draw water with. And that well, that's really deep. Where can you get this living water? Now her curiosity has piqued. Where can you get this living water? Like you keep talking about this living water. Where can you get this? And then she says this, I love this. She goes, you think you're greater than our father Jacob, who actually gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock? She looks at Jesus, the Messiah, the one who, by the way, Jesus came from this line, from this family, from Jacob. And she said, Jesus, do you think you're greater than Jacob, the one who gave us this well? Right, the one of our ancestors, you think you're greater than him? What, the only answer to that question, if you're gonna give a one-word answer to that question, and you're Jesus, what's that answer? Yes. Yes, I am. I think there's a little principle in here too. Jesus continues to have dialogue with her. We're gonna read about their continuous interaction. You see, we can go smack down with people toe-to-toe with facts, and we can start debating this, and we can go through, and we can talk apologetics, and we can split apart words and verbs and phrases and Greek and Hebrew, and we can go through all that, or we could work to continue to have a dialogue, because if Jesus wanted right there, he could have just went smack down and say, oh, you, let's talk about Jacob. Let's talk about his kids. Let's talk about what they did. Let's talk about how where I come from. Did you know that's my great, 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 and he would know better than me? You know, grandfather, you know that? Like he could have done that, but he doesn't. He continues to just have a dialogue. Let's have a conversation. We're sitting here at the well. Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock? Jesus answered, I love this. He continues to turn the conversation back to this living water principle. Jesus answered, everyone who drinks from this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water that I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water that I give them will become a spring of water welling up to eternal life. You see what he's doing? He's turning the attention to something greater than what they're talking about. She thinks they're talking about water. And Jesus is like, no, let's take this up a level. The woman said to him, now she's interested. The woman said to him, sir, you have my attention. Give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and so I don't have to keep coming here to draw water. Now, what time was it again? What time was it? It was noon. It was noon. A lot of scholars have kind of picked some of the details of this apart. Like why did John tell us it was noon? And then why did John tell us it was noon? And then why was she there at noon? Because noon, it would have been the heat of the day. Why is she collecting water in the heat of the day? Because most women in that time would have gotten up early before the sun was up, started their journey, right? Because they're carrying this big clay bucket, you know, this big clay jar, jug, something. I don't know what it is, but right? She's carrying this big clay thing. I don't know why I'm stuck there. Okay, so she keeps carrying this. It's like 20, 30 pounds, and she's gonna put another 20, 30 pounds of water in. So they get up early in the morning so they can get that work done before the sun comes up, before it's super hot. So the well that morning would have been crowded, but this lady shows up at, what time was it? She shows up at noon. Why is she there at noon? A lot of people believe she showed up noon because of what was on her card. Because these ladies all show up early in the morning and they're all talking, hey, Sally, how's it going? Good, Sabrina, how are you? Angie, look, it's Sabrina's here. Like, it's awesome. And they're like, oh, who's that girl, right? And it's like the girl, you know, she's the, yeah. And this lady, whatever was on her card, nobody wanted to hang out with her. And she didn't want to talk about what was on her card. So the theory is she waits till they all get their water and they're on their way home. And then she shows up. See, here's the thing. We all have got a card. I don't know what's on your card. I don't want to know what's on your card. But we've all got a card. And this lady had one too. And Jesus is now saying, hey, let's not talk about water for a second. Let's talk about living water. I've got something that's more powerful than just water. And she leans in, and I love it. She says, sir, give me this water because so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water. And then this really, it's a weird turn in the story because we're talking about water, water, living water, living water, living water, living water. And he tells her, go call your husband and then come back. What? Talk about it like a right turn. Should it be that way? Yeah, right turn. Talk about a right turn. We're talking about water. And then Jesus says to her, why don't you go call your husband and come back? She very quickly replies, well, I have no husband, she replied. The plot thickens. Jesus says to her, oh, you're right when you said you have no husband. The fact is, you've got five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true. Dramatic pause. I love reading God's word. I love narrative stories in God's word. The problem, and I'm not complaining about God's word, but sometimes we just don't know what happens in the spaces. And I'm just so curious, what was that moment like? Was there like a death stare? Where she's like, oh, no, you didn't. Where he calls it out, where he's like, oh, yeah, we're not talking one husband, we're talking multiples. Was there weeping? Was there anger? Was there relief that someone would still talk to her, even though they knew she had five husbands, six or more? We don't know what's in the space there. I don't know what's in the space there, but I can tell you how I felt that day that I sat in the woods and I had to write down one, two, three, four X's on my card. I can tell you how I felt in that moment. I can tell you how I feel when I think about my story and the things that I've done wrong, the times when I've let people down, when I've hurt other people. When other people's sin has impacted me, I can tell you how that feels. But I don't know this little space that happened right here when Jesus just calls it out and he was like, yeah, here's the thing. And regardless of how you ended up with those five husbands, because I was reminded this morning, like in that culture, that whole five husband thing, a lot of those weren't even her choice. Meaning she was property, so she was swapped from person to person to person. That means somebody grabbed her and then said, I'm done with you, discarded her. And somebody else said, I'll take her. Oh, awesome. And then somebody else discarded her. And then somebody else picked her up. And then somebody else discarded her. That's what's on her card. So I don't know that little space, what was going on there. I know what's on my card and how I felt about my stuff and things that I did and things that happened to me. But what happened to her in that space? We don't know. On a keyboard, it's spacebar, spacebar. And then we read this. Then, after whatever amount of time took place, leaving her water jar, the woman goes back to town and says to everyone else, you guys, Come see the man who told me everything that I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And they all came out of town and they made their way toward him. Here's where we're just gonna pull out some thoughts on this. And we're gonna read this particular section of the text over and over and over. The first observation that I see is this, is she says, then leaving her water jar. What is it that we're unwilling to leave? What is it we're unwilling to set down because it stands in the way of us and our relationship with God? The thought is this, what if we leave the jar behind? What if we'll do as this lady did and we'll actually just set the jar down, set the heavy stuff that we've been carrying down, set the job that we think is most important? What if we just set that down and we leave the jar and we run with joy? What if we do that? What would that look like? Because that's what this lady did when she realized who Jesus was and that he could take all of her stuff, that he not only did he knew it and he continued to talk to her, which means if he knew that, that means he probably knows that other thing and probably that other stuff, but he continued to talk to her. What's keeping us from leaving that jar and just running with joy? Because that's what she did. I know it sounds simple, it sounds easy. I know it's more complex than that. But we keep clinging to these things that are heavy and they're a burden, they're work. It's hard to hide. If we're honest, we're probably really not hiding them and other people know about it. We think we're hiding it. But we need to simply leave the jar behind. Secondly, it says, then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And they came out of the town and they made their way toward him. You see, she, for all practical purposes, especially in the book of John, she's the first evangelist. She's the very first evangelist where she has an experience, an encounter with Jesus, and then she goes and tells other people, and then she brings them back. She's the very first evangelist that we see. So what keeps us from doing that? The most common reason I have heard over and over and over that people will say is, I don't know the Bible well enough, so I can't share about Jesus. Real quick, what degree did she have? Five husbands, that was her degree. She had life experience that Jesus looked over and she just shared her story. She just shared her story. What if we tell the story we know? What if we just do that? What if we just tell the parts that we know? Well, here's what I know. This is who I was. And then I had an encounter with Jesus and now this is who I am. We should learn more together. The phrase up there, and I want to be careful with this because I want to qualify it. It says, we don't need credentials, we need Christ. Now, I have a degree in telecommunications from Ball State. Okay, that's my undergrad. And when I applied for Ball State, I got accepted on academic probation to Ball State, people, seriously. Like I'm pretty intelligent. I just didn't like to use it. Okay. And so, or at least that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Okay. So I get accepted to Ball State, a degree in telecommunications. I get out in 3.5 years because if it's going to take me longer than that, I'm probably not going to finish. And then a couple years later, after working in advertising, I felt this call to ministry. I just knew I wanted people to know about Jesus. And so I go to a couple people that I know. One of them was actually the guy at the church camp the very day that I accepted Christ that I already told you that other story. Like his name was Kurt. I go to Kurt and said, Kurt, what do I do? Kurt's like, you should talk to this other guy. I talked to this other guy. And he was like, you need to go to seminary. And I was like, I do. And he was like, yeah, you do. And I was like, okay. I enroll like weeks later, I enroll in graduate school, right? And the first question they asked me, they're like, hey, we're going to need your transcripts. And I was like, are you really? Like, do we really need to go that route? And they're like, yeah, just send us your transcripts. I was like, okay. And they're like, do you have a checkbook? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, you know what? We're good. And so I just paid the bill and now I'm enrolled in seminary. right? Like all of that took about a week and a half. It was right before Christmas. They enroll me in seminary. I take a New Testament class. I take a church history class and I take a preaching class. My preaching class, I'll never forget, I'm sitting in there. They'd done like 3 or 4 days of like sermons and stuff, and they're teaching us how to put together a sermon. And he's like, okay, so we're just gonna do this. We're gonna do this in class. And so I'm sitting at my desk and I've got paper out and I'm starting to write this sermon. And the guy's walking around the room with his arms behind his back. He's just kind of doing this, just walking around. And I feel him standing over my shoulder looking. And he said, I was like, okay, he likes it. And he goes, that's not how we do it. I just remember saying to him, well, this is how I do it. And he repeats, that's not how we do it. And for some reason, I thought he had a hearing deficiency, so I just repeated my part again with emphasis. Well, this is how I do it. To which he says, that's not how you'll do it in this class. Folks, I have an F in preaching in graduate school, in seminary. And right now, some of you are like, not surprised, right? Like, shocker. Listen, it was a rebellious spirit. I don't feel good about that. Like, I still laugh about it, but I was rebellious. I was probably a little arrogant, right? But here's what I was. I was on fire. I didn't want somebody telling me how to tell people about Jesus. I just wanted to tell people about Jesus. And I didn't need a PhD or a doctorate to tell people about Jesus, and neither do you. Nobody's gonna say amen to that at all. Like, seriously? Now, yeah, too late. Nope, too late. Now here's the thing. I wanna be clear about this. Because I'm in a town with a college and a seminary, okay? Like, Dr. Joe Graham, I'm coming to your thing on Tuesday. I'll be there, okay? And I love that you've got the letters behind your name. I'm not saying that offices and some roles shouldn't have degrees. So I'm not poo-pooing education. But it is a sad excuse if we will make that the excuse why we're not telling people about Jesus, because we don't know enough. I'm not talking about teaching and preaching and offices and roles and jobs. I'm talking about simply telling what he has done in our lives. Nothing should stand in the way of that. This lady, she had 5 husbands and a really cool meeting in a well. That's all she had. And she was like, you gotta come meet this guy. He talked to me. Nobody talks to me. The girls at the well, they give me dirty looks. This guy's a Jew, came, sat, we had a conversation. He knew all about me and still wanted to know more. Okay, I got a little carried away there. But it's not about, it's not about what we know, it's about who we know. And we can share that. Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. See, look at this. Could this be the Messiah? She was saying, I don't know much more than that. He talked about living water, and I remember somebody in Bible school tell me something about living water. This might be him, you guys. They came out of town, they made their way toward him. You see, I think we make it too complex sometimes. Sometimes it's just about pointing people to Jesus. Pointing people to him and not ourselves. At this same camp, you know, my wife and I went back and we would share with kids and we'd tell them our story and we'd encourage them to tell their story and we'd offer them a chance on Sunday or, you know, on the weeknight to stand up and share their testimony, share their story. That testimony, that's our churchy word for share your story. But then we'd have to coach kids because what typically would happen is they'd stand up and they would go, when I was 4, I took my sister's doll and I ripped its head off. And then when I was 5, you know, I did this. And they would stand up for 15 minutes and talk about what they had done. And then they would go, and Jesus saved my life. Like, hold on. This isn't about your story. This is about his story and what he did with your story. What if we point people to Jesus instead of ourselves? I think that becomes an obstacle for us sharing his stories. We think we have to share our story. We do, but do I have to give you all the details? Nope, I don't. I'm not gonna tell you all the gruesome details. I'm gonna tell you the details that are important so that you can understand the work that he did in my life. But I wanna tell you more about him than about me. I think telling our story ends up being an obstacle because we think we're talking about us and we're not talking about us, we're talking about him. Leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? I'm not sure, but I'm gonna share what I do know. It might be him." And here's what I love. They came out of town and they made their way toward him. Now, this is puzzling for me because if you come up to me and tell me, "Hey, I just ran into a guy in the lobby who told me everything I've done wrong. You should come meet him." I'm going to go, "No. He's going to tell me all the things about me that I've done wrong." But that's in my human perspective. You know, maybe I'm out on a limb here. But I think the people that we live, learn, work, and play with, I think they would probably like to know it if we've met somebody who knows all of our stuff and still loves us anyway. Because you know what? They've got their own card and they're probably looking for someone who will still talk to them and accept them and believe in them, even if they know everything on their card. These guys don't run away from that person. Think about this. They don't run away from that person. When she's all excited and says, "I just met Jesus, the Messiah. He knows everything about me and still talks to me." They don't run away from her. They run toward Jesus. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony, where she said, "He told me everything I ever did." So when the Samaritans actually run towards Jesus and they came to him, they said, "Hey, stay. Would you stay here?" And he stayed another 2 days. And because of his words, many more of them became believers. Wait, what did that say? And because of his words? Oh, that's right. We think it's our words that change people's lives. It's not. It's not what we say or what we do. It's what he does that changes people's lives. Because of his words, many more became believers. And they said to the woman, "Hey, we no longer believe just because of what you said. We've now experienced, heard, felt, and seen for ourselves. And we know that this man really is the savior of the world." That should let all of us breathe a deep sigh of relief that it is not the work that we do that changes people's lives. We're just responsible for sharing our story and pointing to him. He does the heavy lifting. We just share our story and point to him. Share our story and point to him. Share our story, point to him. He's the one that does the work. And he's really good at it. It's why he tells us, it's why we receive instruction in God's word to regularly gather together and to remember and reflect on the work that he did on the cross. That's what we're instructed to do. We call it communion now. We boil it down to this one little thing, but we're regularly reminded to remember the work that he did. But if you read the text, what we're told in the instructions for communion, we're told to do this. First, examine yourselves. Examine yourself first. Why are we instructed to examine ourselves first? I would really rather just look at his stuff. But I think we're instructed to examine ourselves first so that we can be reminded of how significant his work was. We're instructed to examine ourselves and to think about what it is that we've done that was superseded by what he did. His body was broken. His blood was shed. The ushers have got communion elements. If you don't have one of those, just put your hand up and they'll make sure that you get one, because we're going to experience this together this morning. The scriptures tell us to examine ourselves first. And so we're going to take a minute and we're actually going to do that this morning. We're going to reflect on what it is that we've done. And yeah, are we talking about our card? Well, kind of. We're talking about the things that stand between us and God. And after we examine ourselves, we're instructed and we're guided to do this. To receive the bread. The bread is the symbol. It's the sacrament. It's what Jesus did with his disciples when he gathered them together that night, just hours before he would go to his death. And in a moment of foreshadowing, what he told them, he said, "This is my body broken for you." And he takes this bread and he breaks it. And it's really interesting. You know, if we fill in some of the blanks and combine that with the story that we just told this morning, he was like, "This is my body broken for you, and everything that you write down on your card, my body will be broken for you. I'm gonna cover that. I got it. It's mine. My body has been broken." There's another one right back there in the back, right there, right all the way in the back, all the way in the back. He says, "My body has been broken for you." And so we gather with believers all around the world today, and we remember the work that he did when his body was broken for us. We receive that together this morning. Now, I always think it's interesting when we talk about his body was broken, because you know what? I mean, I can still function with a broken arm, the broken leg, right? With a head cold. Like, I can still make it through the day. But this picture that we're given by Jesus when he says, "When you gather together regularly, I want you to do this. I want you to remember that my body was broken, but I also want you to remember that my blood was shed. My blood was poured out once and for all as the atonement for sin." I can hobble with a broken leg. I don't live without blood. And his blood was poured out once and for all as the sacrifice. What used to take place is they had to shed the blood of an animal regularly for people for the sacrifice and atonement of sins. And Jesus comes on the scene and goes like, "Game over. Once and for all, I got this. It's on me. For every card and every note on every card, every X on every card, I'll take it." And we're told to remember that his blood was shed for us. And we do that this morning. So here's how we're going to do this. These guys have just, they're going to lead us in a time of worship for us to just reflect on that. So we've heard this story, this woman who had this card and lots more on it. And I'm going to challenge you to think about your own stuff, examine your own self, but do it in light of what it is that God has done. And so I'm just going to challenge you to stay in your seat and to just sit here and to just reflect. And as these guys lead us and as we begin to sing, there'll be a moment where you feel like, "Okay, yeah, maybe I think I'm ready to stand." For some of you, that'll happen as soon as they start singing. Others of you, you just need to sit and just bake in it for a few minutes. And that's okay. Do it at your own pace, your own speed, all good. But let's just remember the work that was done for us. And then let's just go share a story and point to him. God, I love you. Lord, we give you this space. We give you this time. We give you this moment. Lord, just, it's yours. So you can have it. Lord, speak to us in this space. Lord, just step in. Remind us. Reveal to us what it is you want us to know about your unconditional love for us. so that we can experience more of you, so that others can maybe experience you in a relationship with you for the first time ever. So God, use this time.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's message. We would love to personally invite you to one of our Sunday services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. in the Performing Arts Center at Warsaw Community High School at 1 Tiger Lane in Warsaw, Indiana. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media by following Mission Point CC. You can also contribute to what God is doing through Mission Point. Simply visit missionpoint.net/give and give a gift today. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great week.